It is 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
The UN Security Council revises the South Sudan peacekeeping mission. Debate over the whereabouts of nearly 300 abducted Nigerian schoolgirls. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. The UN Security Council Tuesday voted unanimously to change the mandate of the peacekeeping mission in South Sudan, focus on the protection of civilians instead of nation building. The council authorized UN troops to use all necessary means to protect civilians, monitor and investigate human rights abuses, assist the delivery of humanitarian aid, and support a cessation of hostilities deal. Violence broke out in December after months of tensions sparked by a decision by President Salva Kiir to dismiss his vice president, Riek Machar. The conflict has killed thousands and displaced more than a million, including between 75,000 and 85,000 who sought refuge in UN peacekeeping camps. Meanwhile, the UN Refugee Agency says South Sudan's internally displaced now exceeds a million. Lisa Schlein reports many thousands of others have fled to other countries.
More than 20,000 people also fled to neighboring Ethiopia, Kenya, Sudan, and Uganda, swelling the refugee numbers to 370,000. UNHCR spokesman Adrian Edwards says Ethiopia is hosting more than 131,000.
Recent arrivals say they fled fighting in neighboring Jonglei and Upper Nile states, the areas around Matiang in Longchuk County in Upper Nile state. Those from other areas said they feared imminent attack or food insecurity.
Edward says Ethiopia cannot keep up with the swarm of people arriving. He says an average of 1,000 South Sudanese arrive each day, and three refugee camps that opened this year are overflowing. He says the UNHCR and Ethiopian authorities are looking for land to erect a fourth camp. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The Obama administration says it has no independent information on the Nigerian government's claim it knows the location of nearly 300 schoolgirls kidnapped by Boko Haram extremists. During a news briefing Tuesday in Washington, U.S. spokesperson Jen Psaki said the United States and other countries are working with Nigeria to achieve the same goal.
We don't have independent information from the United States to support these reports you referenced.
This is the second time I think the Nigerian military has said they found the girls, and there's nothing to corroborate that. I believe the first one they withdrew that statement. So does this represent should we take this as an indication that the Nigerian military really doesn't know what they're doing?
I wouldn't draw that conclusion. We continue to support their efforts on the ground. They're in the lead. Everybody is taking every step possible to find the girls, and that's what we're all working towards, the same goal.
The Boko Haram Islamic extremists kidnapped some 300 girls from Chibok Village in Borno State last month. Chibok community leader Pogu Bitris says it's past time to reach out and negotiate the terms of the girls' release.
Now the military is saying they are not going in to get the girls. Fine. We are saying negotiate this thing. The government is saying they are not going to negotiate. So there are discordant voices. Our president is the commander-in-chief of the armed forces. And if he said there's no negotiation and the military said they are not going to use force, then what are they going to use? It has to be negotiation. So let's just come out pump and clear and say we're going to negotiate, but the terms of negotiation are left for the negotiators to decide. I think that is a better way of putting it.
Former Nigerian President Olusegun Obasanjo has reportedly met with people close to Boko Haram in attempts to broker the girls' release. A source told the French press agency the meeting focused on how to free the girls through negotiation. It's unclear whether the meeting over the weekend had the sanction of the Nigerian government. Meanwhile, security sources and witnesses told Reuters news agency suspected Boko Haram gunmen attacked a Nigerian military base and nearby police barracks, killing at least 31 security personnel late Monday attack in Yobe State. In Ghana, the French press agency reports at least 6 people killed, 3 others injured, when a mine collapsed in the Ashanti region. A spokesman for the region's minister said the 6 were digging illegally on land belonging to a mining company. Mali's defense minister, Somelu Boybeya Maiga, resigned Tuesday, a week after the army was defeated in a clash with Tuareg separatists in the northern town of Kidal. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, May 28th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Egypt extends its presidential election by one more day to today, Wednesday.
Prime Minister Ibrahim Mehlab's announcement that the vote for president had been extended through Wednesday caught many Egyptians by surprise.
VAS correspondent Edward Urania in Cairo. Egyptian activists seek to redefine national politics. Malawi's main opposition party rejects ballot recounts from the May 20th election. Central African Republic refugees in Cameroon face catastrophic health risks. And the United Nations says its mission in South Sudan will from now on focus on protecting civilians.
We've been doing that since early this year, and so it's confirmation that these are the priorities, pending such time as there will be a political settlement.
Hervé Lassus is the UN peacekeeping chief, and Niger signs a long-delayed uranium mining agreement with a French company. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Egyptian government has extended voting in the country's presidential election to a third day, today Wednesday, and warned voters that they will be fined if they do not cast ballots. Edward Urania reports for VOA from Cairo.
Prime Minister Ibrahim Mehlab's announcement that the vote for president had been extended through Wednesday caught many Egyptians by surprise. The government had already declared Tuesday a public holiday to spur reluctant voters to turn out, and top Christian and Muslim religious figures urged people to cast their ballots. Coptic Pope Tewodros told journalists that citizens should vote even if they do not like the choice of candidates, because their participation adds to the credibility of the election.
He argues voters
who do not like the candidates still have a duty to vote because the election will help stabilize the nation and build democracy. Scenes of enthusiasm were visible in many places. At a women's polling station in the Cairo working class district of Imbaba, a throng of women wearing headscarves cheered and ululated as voters lined up outside. Government offices, banks, and the stock market were closed by official decree, and the normally thick weekday traffic was absent from most major thoroughfares. At a polling station, but crowds dwindled under the heavy midday sun. In the port city of Marsa Matruh, voter Abdullah Abdul Latif insisted he and his friends decided to vote in order to fulfill the official roadmap towards a return to democracy, which former defense minister Abdel Fattah al-Sisi put forth last July after ousting the increasingly unpopular Islamist president Mohamed Morsi. Abdel Latif points out the heat had turned back many voters Monday, but it had cooled off slightly Tuesday, and people were voting normally. Former defense minister Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, who is facing leftist Hamdine Sabahi, is expected to win the election by a wide margin, but his supporters are hoping for a high turnout. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
As Egyptian military supporters celebrate their triumph over the Muslim Brotherhood, youth activists say their own support base has dwindled and that opposing the government is increasingly dangerous. But they say they hope to redefine Egyptian politics from now on. Heather Murdoch has more from Cairo.
For many Egyptian voters, this week's election was not a vote for anyone. Opposition voters said they were not so much supporting Hamdi Sabahi as not voting for Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, Egypt's former army chief who has been running the country for nearly a year. Many Sisi supporters said they were not so much voting for Sisi, but against the Muslim Brotherhood's Mohamed Morsi, who was ousted from the presidency last year and still claims the seat from a jail cell. At a polling station in Cairo, this woman, Amal, says she came out to vote, so Mr. Morsi cannot come back. Amal says the election has quieted fears about a return to chaos. Since Mr. Morsi was thrown out of office, politics in Egypt has grown increasingly violent, and thousands have been killed or arrested. Spokesperson Fekri Nabil of Strong Egypt, a party that boycotted this week's elections, says parties like his need to redefine Egyptian politics.
We found that there is a great polarization in the society itself to divide it between Islamist and non-Islamist. And from our point of view, it was not the real battle or the real fight. We need to have fight for whom with democracy and whom against democracy.
After the 2011 revolution, many new political parties were formed, like the Egypt Freedom Party, a centrist group that attracts young members. Party Secretary General Shahir George says since Sisi's rule began, many party members have fled, fearing retribution for opposing the military.
The challenge we face is how to win the trust of the crowd once more again, because this is where we're lacking support these days. There is a popularity of stopping street acts. There is a popularity of ignoring human rights for the time being.
But young political parties that want neither military nor religious rule have been stymied by infighting. George says moving forward requires taking a clear stance, not only against repression, but for human rights.
And now we need to focus more on how to build a solid opposition that would have a clear vision on economic and social rights in parallel to political and civil rights.
At the polls, voters said they would have liked more choices, but the young parties are too inexperienced and too fragmented. The future for new political parties in Egypt is uncertain, and members report arbitrary arrests and harassment, saying opposition to the government these days is viewed either as ignorance or a crime. Heather Murdoch for VOA News, Cairo.
Malawi's main opposition Democratic People's Party, the DPP, says it is strongly against the recount of all ballots from the May 20th election, saying the country's high court has the sole responsibility to order an election recount. DPP spokesman Nicholas Dawusi says the Electoral Commission's decision to order a vote recount was illegal. Dawusi tells reporter Peter Clottier that the recount of the entire election could lead to ongoing electoral disputes.
Indeed, we, DPP, do not agree with the sentiments or direction that the Malawi Electoral Commission has done. First of all, it is extremely illegal for the Malawi Electoral Commission to order for the recount of ballot box. They don't have that power. That power of a recount can only be done after the Malawi Electoral Commission have announced the final results and they give 7 days for any complainant to do that. And that power lies with the Malawi High Court.
Have you petitioned the court to challenge the directive of the Electoral Commission to recount the votes?
We petitioned the High Court. We have gone to petition the High Court to stop the Malawi Electoral Commission from doing so.
And what happened?
Well, they gave us an injunction, but the other party went to obtain a stay order. We are intending to go back to the court to make sure that that directive does not arise.
But doesn't the Constitution give the Electoral Commission mandate to organize credible elections? If there are concerns about the elections, don't you think they can retrace their steps, correct the mistakes, and ensure that the voices of the Malawians are heard through the votes?
Indeed, the Malawi Electoral Commission is mandated to conduct a free, fair, transparent election. Now, if there's any grievances, what is our law, the constitution and the statutory provisions, the presidential parliamentary elections act states that within 8 days of polling, the results have to be released. If there's any irregularities, those grievances have to be addressed after 7 days.
It appears that all the participating political parties have agreed for the recount. Why is only the DPP against it? Some people are suggesting that perhaps the DPP rigged the elections. That is why the party is against the recount of the ballot papers. What do you say to that?
Not at all. We are not against anything. We simply want the law to be followed. What are our laws? The Presidential Parliamentary Elections Act and the Constitution says that if you have a grievance, tell the election, the Electoral Commission, let the election determine the winner, and later on, the 7 days, you will lodge your complaint. That's what it says.
Nicholas Dawusi is the spokesman for Malawi's main opposition Democratic People's Party. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Lilongwe. It's Wednesday morning, May 28th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 16 minutes past the hour. The UN Security Council voted unanimously on Tuesday to refocus the UN peacekeeping mission in South Sudan to concentrate primarily on protecting civilians from intercommunal violence. At the United Nations, VOA's Margaret Bashir says the council also has warned those obstructing peace and reconciliation that they could face international sanctions.
UNMISS, as the mission is known, was created in 2011 to help the world's newest country achieve peace and support longer-term development. But with the outbreak of violence last December, the mission has had to turn all of its attention to protecting civilians. Now the mission officially will move away from peace-building activities to protecting civilians, aiding the delivery of humanitarian assistance, monitoring human rights, and preventing renewed violence. UN Peacekeeping Chief Hervé Letsous told VOA the new mandate formalizes activities that the peacekeepers have been trying to carry out since the crisis erupted.
We've been doing that since early this year, and so it's confirmation that these are the priorities, pending such time as there will be a political settlement. And then, of course, we'll have to think on the basis of that settlement what will be the longer-term tasks that will need to be redefined.
In December, the UN Security Council increased UNMISS troop strength from about 7,000 to more than 12,000. Not all have arrived yet. The surge will include about 2,500 peacekeepers who will protect ceasefire monitors in South Sudan. The resolution adopted Tuesday expresses support for ceasefire agreements signed in January and earlier this month and calls for their immediate and full implementation. The Security Council also vowed to consider all appropriate measures against parties who undermine peace and security, a reference to the possible imposition of sanctions. South Sudan's Ambassador Francis Madang Dang told the Council his government is disappointed that UN assistance for strengthening government capacities is no longer a part of the mandate and hopes it will be included when the mandate comes up for an extension in November.
The objective of capacity building is to help create a state that is capable, responsible, and responsive, not a state that is oppressive. Failure to help build a functioning state could lead to serious problems which the United Nations and the international community might be later called upon to help address.
The situation in South Sudan remains tense, with sporadic violations to the ceasefire between forces loyal to President Salva Kiir and his former Vice President Riek Machar. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
The medical aid group Doctors Without Borders is calling for urgent assistance for thousands of refugees from the Central African Republic facing a catastrophic health situation in Cameroon. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Doctors Without Borders, or Médecins Sans Frontières, says refugees arriving in Cameroon are in a much worse state than those who fled to the country a few months ago. They are exhausted, sick, and traumatized after having walked for weeks or months, fleeing violence and staving off attacks by armed gangs. MSF says 6 out of 10,000 children under 5 are dying every day, a mortality rate well above the emergency threshold. Program manager for Cameroon, Christine Jamet, who recently visited the region, says more than 40%, or nearly one child in two, is suffering from acute malnutrition.
What is particularly striking is the fact that it touched much more children between 5 and 10 years. Usually when you have a malnutrition situation, it's the children less than 5 that are affected. But here in this situation, we can see children above 5, up to 10, up to 12 years old. We can see adults, we can see pregnant women, lactating women who are malnourished, which shows that it's a general malnutrition situation.
Jamais says MSF is focusing on treating the more than 1,000 severely malnourished and 1,500 moderately malnourished children who have been admitted to the therapeutic feeding programs. The United Nations estimates more than 85,000 people have fled the CAR into Cameroon this year. Jamais says MSF is concentrating on providing shelter, food, water, and other relief to the large numbers of refugees who have not been registered and are still waiting for emergency aid.
We are very scared about malaria. We see an increase of malaria cases. You must know that it's a rainy season at the moment, so with a rainy season, malaria goes on. So it's something that we definitely need to reinforce as well. And of course, we are facing as well a measles epidemic.
MSF has been carrying out measles vaccination campaigns in eastern Cameroon, but Jamais says the constant influx of refugees makes it impossible to contain the outbreak. She says the agency is also increasing its preparations to face a possible cholera outbreak. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Niger and the French state-owned uranium firm Areva signed a new mining deal on Monday after more than 2 years of negotiations. Activists say they are cautiously optimistic about the terms of the new deal, in which Areva has promised to increase royalties to the country and invest in local infrastructure. Jennifer Lazuta has more from VOA's West Africa Bureau in Dakar.
The government of Niger said Monday that it has renegotiated its expired mining contract with the French uranium company Areva. The exact terms of the new contract have not yet been made public. But according to a joint statement by Areva and Niger's government, Areva has agreed to operate under the framework of the country's 2006 mining code, which requires paying an increased share of profits to the government and has fewer tax exemptions. Niger is one of the world's largest producers of uranium and yet remains one of the poorest countries in the world. Activists say it's about time Niger got a fair share of the mining profits. Ali Idrissa is the national coordinator for Publish What You Pay Niger, a network of organizations that campaign for transparency and accountability in the mining sector. He said the signing of the contract is a promising step forward, but not enough. He says for more than 5 months, Areva has continued to refuse to apply the Nigerian mining law. Now they have arrived at a deal, but we don't yet know what exactly is in the contract. He says the government needs to respect the constitution and publish the new terms, and then apply the law to Areva so that Areva's uranium extraction activities actually benefit our citizens. Areva's previous mining contract, which was signed in 2001 and based on Niger's 1993 mining code, expired last year. Under the old terms, the company was exempt from paying export duties on uranium, as well as from all customs duties and value-added taxes on mining materials and equipment. Under the new contract, Niger could see an increase in the rate of mining royalties from 5.5% up to 12%. Publish What You Pay says that a decrease in VAT exemptions could increase tax revenues by between $13.6 million and $20.5 million per year. Areva says it also plans to invest an estimated $160 million in local infrastructure projects. However, the company, which has previously stated that the terms of the 2006 mining code are not profitable, says it will delay the start of production at its newest mine until the new terms become profitable. The delay at the mine, which is expected to double Niger's current uranium output, could mean a significant loss of revenue for the government. Alice Powell, the communications coordinator for Publish What You Pay, said only time will tell how the new deal benefits Niger's people.
I think the key thing is, however, is when the contract itself is published and we can see all the details, we can see the extent of this, and make sure and see what exemptions and concessions have been granted to see how much the government is really getting and the extent to which the mining code is being applied in full.
Powell said that Niger's constitution requires that the contract be made publicly available. Publish What You Pay is calling for it to be published immediately. Jennifer Lazuta for VOA News, Dakar.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Sudan's El Merrekh beat South Sudan's Malakia 4-2. In the Council of Eastern Central Africa Football Association's SECAFA Nile Basin Tournament in Khartoum, Sudan on Tuesday. Earlier on, Uganda's Victoria University thrashed Zanzibar's Police 3-0. The group phase of the contest ends today, Wednesday, with Rwanda's Etincelles playing Tanzania mainland's Mbeya City, Kenya's AFC Leopards engage Burundi's Academy TJ, and Ethiopia's Defense play Sudan's El Shandi. Meanwhile, hosts Tanzania pipped Malawi by a solitary goal in a friendly match played in Dar es Salaam on Tuesday. Earlier on, World Cup-bound Cameroon beat Macedonia 2-0, Australia and South Africa drew 1-1, and Guinea pipped Mali 2-1. Today, Wednesday, South Korea hosts Tunisia in Seoul, Angola face Morocco in Faro, Portugal, and Nigeria encounter Scotland in London in the United Kingdom. In Nigeria, the FIFA Under-17 World Cup champions and Nigeria Golden Eaglets host their Egyptian peers in a friendly match at the Amadou Bello Stadium in Kaduna City, Kaduna State, North Central Nigeria, today, Wednesday. The two teams will meet again at the same venue on Friday. Finally, South Africa topped the medal table on Tuesday, the fifth day at the Africa Youth Olympic Games in Gaborone, Botswana. They have 16 gold, 6 silver, and 3 bronze medals. Egypt is second, followed by Algeria, then Namibia, Nigeria, Tunisia, Madagascar, Senegal, Seychelles, Mauritius, and hosts Botswana are in 10th place. They are followed by Zimbabwe, Ghana, Zambia, Morocco, and Kenya. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Our listener mail for this Wednesday morning, May 28th.
Good morning, Daybreak Africa and listeners across the world. Permit me use your medium once again to call on the Northern Nigeria Elders Forum not to always condemn but bring to book the Boko Haram insurgents and their sponsors. This call became very prominent and necessary because both the Western Nigeria, East, South, and the North jointly fought for Nigeria independence. So why must Aso Rock be left for one region alone? Albert Alagbo, from Obudu Kato Ranch Bachelor Award in Obaliko Local Government Area of Cross River State, Nigeria. Thank you.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Egypt's Election Commission has extended the presidential poll by one day in an effort to increase voter turnout in an election that is widely expected to bring former Army Chief Abdel Fattah el-Sisi to power. The two-day vote was expected to end Tuesday, but polling Monday was reported to be moderate in a country with 54 million registered voters. The U.S. State Department says it has no independent information on the Nigerian government's claim that it knows the location of the schoolgirls kidnapped by Boko Haram extremists. Spokeswoman Jan Psaki said Tuesday, even if the United States knew where they are, it would not talk about it publicly. She also said, like the Nigerians, the U.S. would probably not attempt a rescue mission because of the safety and security of the girls. And the United Nations Security Council has voted unanimously to change the mandate of the UN peacekeeping mission in conflict-torn South Sudan to focus on the protection of civilians. And that's it for this Wednesday, May 28th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing everybody in Africa a very good day.
Hello, I am Shaka Sali. Join me on Straight Talk Africa every Wednesday as we discuss topics of special interest to Africans, including politics, economic development, press freedom, health, social issues, and conflict resolution. Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers.
Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOANews.com.